I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Balance Body Labs, Florida Alternative Medicine, and Six Pack Bags. All right, welcome everybody to another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. This is the second in our Mr. Olympia series. And this week we're going to be talking to the one and only Lee Haney, eight-time Mr. Olympia, one of the true icons in the sport, one of the greatest Mr. Olympias ever. And this is actually from a conversation I had with Lee a while back, and we made a video interview of it on our bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. If you go to the website, you can see that. But I thought, since we start the podcast and we're having our Mr. Olympia series, and we talked to Dorian Yates last week, I thought, why not talk to Lee Haney? Let's bring back that interview with Lee Haney, because I think a lot of our podcast listeners have not heard this interview before, and it was a great interview where we basically talk about Lee Haney's whole career, starting as a teenager, because he won the Teenage Mr. America, and then working his way up to the pros, and then, of course, all of his Mr. Olympia wins from 1984 to 1991, where Lee broke the record, broke Arnold Schwarzenegger's record of 7 wins, and he won 8 Mr. Olympias. And Lee's got some really great insight into different bodybuilders, and he studied the people before him. And there's this one part of our conversation where he talks about bodybuilders who really project on stage. And if you really want to check that out or listen for that part of the interview, where he talks about bodybuilders who really won a lot of titles, but how some of them project and others don't. I thought it was a really great insight from Lee Haney. So you're really going to enjoy this interview. As I mentioned, this episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Balance Body Labs. If you're working hard to achieve your physical best, you need the optimum level of nutrients to reach peak performance. And when those nutrients go missing, so does your ability to have a productive day. Balance Body Labs has an easy-to-use at-home test kit that helps you detect your nutrient levels. They offer 3 different categories of tests for endurance athletes, those training for a competition, and weight loss. So you just choose your category, you take the simple test at home, you mail the test kit back, and then you log on for your results. They will test for your vitamin levels, your amino acids, your testosterone levels, your cortisol levels, and your lactic acid. No more going to a doctor's office and going through a painful blood test. If you don't know what your nutrient levels are, you won't be able to perform at your optimum levels. And Balanced Body Labs will get you there. So just log on to balancebodylabs.com and sign up for your own easy-to-use at-home testing kit. And we're also brought to you by our friends at Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance out your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure that you will not only look and feel amazing, but you'll also be comfortable knowing that the experts there are with you every step of the way. They have very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So give them a call for more information and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. You can contact them at their website, which is opeshealth.org. That's opeshealth.org. Or give them a call at their office number, 813-906-6737. They will service anybody in the United States, even though they are located out here in Tampa, Florida. And you could just use the promotion code LEGEND, and you'll get a free consultation from them and also 20% off any packages that you order. That's at opeshealth.org. All right. And we got some great feedback from last week's podcast with Dorian Yates. A lot of great emails I got from all you guys. So please send your input and your comments. I love hearing from all of you about it. But everybody was really, really happy with that interview. Dorian is still a real popular bodybuilder, even though he hasn't competed in like 20 years. But I think, like as I said in the interview, I think people still really respect Dorian for his hardcore work ethic and just the way he conducted his career, and how serious he was about both his training and about competition. And as I said in the interview, I think he raised the game with bodybuilding, with not only his physique, but also with his training intensity. It was a great interview, and I want to thank Dorian again for joining us. I also want to send a shout out to the guys over at Bodybuilding Nerds Podcast. I've been listening to other bodybuilding podcasts since I started mine, and I heard their show last week, and they review other podcasts at the end of the show, and they really like Bodybuilding Legends. So thank you guys for listening to the show, and thanks for your positive review. I know you guys have a lot of listeners, so I think that'll go a long way to getting people to log on to bodybuildinglegendshow.com and listening to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So I appreciate that, and I will continue to listen to your show also. And I also want to mention, we're also brought to you by Six Pack Fitness. And Six Pack Fitness creates premium, iconic meal management bags along with healthy, competitor-friendly hot sauces and accessories geared toward everyone from the serious athlete, bodybuilder, CrossFit, or fitness enthusiast. So if you are serious about your diet and you're serious about your training and you have to bring your meals with you, you definitely want to go to sixpackbags.com and check out the different options they have to offer. These bags are awesome if you need to take your meals with you, either on a trip or even just for the day, if you're going to school or if you're going to work and you want to bring all your meals with you instead of eating out at restaurants. So go to sixpackbags.com and use the promo code LEGENDS10 and you'll get 10% off any purchase. All right, I also want to mention we are working on our next season, which will be the 1981 Mr. Olympia, where we're going to talk to a series of individuals about that very controversial contest. We've already recorded some interviews with Roger Schwab, who we had on season one talking about pumping iron. So Roger was the head judge at the 1981 Mr. Olympia, so he's going to give us his input into the contest. I also was able to talk to John Balick, who was the owner of Iron Man magazine. John purchased that magazine from Perry and Mabel Rader back in 1986. But back in 1981, he was working for the Weider organization, and he was at the 1981 Mr. Olympia as a photographer. And so we had a great conversation with John where he talks not only about the 1981 Olympia, but also about his association with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Him and Arnold Schwarzenegger used to do seminars together where Arnold would talk about his training and then John would take over about the nutrition. And so John has a long history. He was actually in the 1965 Mr. Olympia event where he was competing in the Mr. America. So that's how far John Balick goes. He's been in the sport for many, many decades. So we had a great conversation with him. And we're going to be talking also to Jim Rockell, who was a judge with the IFBB back during that time. And he's really good friends with Danny Padilla, who was, of course, was in the 1981 Mr. Olympia contest. So Danny and Jim will be joining us for an interview. And we also hope to talk to Samir Benoot, who was in the contest. Also, I hope to talk to Roy Callender. We just recently did a long interview with Roy for our video interview, but I hope to get him back on the show on the podcast to talk about the 1981 Mr. Olympia. And I also heard back from Tom Platt. So I'm hoping, really hoping I could talk to Tom about the 1981 Mr. Olympia, because in many people's opinions, the top three at that contest were Danny Padilla, Roy Callender, and Tom Platt. So I hope we get to talk to all of those guys. So that is in the works, guys. And next week, we're going to have another Mr. Olympia series where we're going to talk to Chris Dickerson, who was 1982 Mr. Olympia. But after that, we're going to get our 1981 Mr. Olympia series going. So that'll be really, really exciting. So we are still working on that, and it should be coming along a couple weeks now. All right. So that's it. Again, want to thank our sponsors for sponsoring this episode. And here is our interview with eight-time Mr. Olympia, Lee Haney. Enjoy. All right. Welcome to the Bodybuilding Legend Show. And I have a very special guest this week, Mr. Lee Haney, eight-time Mr. Olympia, a true legend in the sport. And one of the best bodybuilders, no doubt about it, in the history of bodybuilding. How you doing, Lee?
I'm doing good. What do you mean, one of the best?
The best.
I felt that, man. I'm feeling that. One of the best. You see that? Hey, man. The record is there.
Let me start again.
Undefeated. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the best careers ever.
Hey, I heard the little old lady said, "Mighty poor dog, we don't want to wag his own tail," you know? So I'm wagging my tail a little bit.
All right, okay. I'll wag it for you today, Lee. Well, Lee, let's start at the very beginning. I know you started lifting as a teenager, and I believe you lived in South Carolina, right?
Right, town called Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Right. And I just read an article not too long ago on muscular development where you were talking about your very first contest and how you started competing, I think, at 16 years old, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. That was, man, what an experience. And it was there that I really fell in love with bodybuilding and felt that, hey, man, this is what I got to do. This is what I want to be.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I didn't place. But I was told by a lot of the people there that they felt I had a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. And I needed to get some real posing trunks because at the time I was wearing underwear that I purchased from Kmart. You know? I'm a beginning.
Yeah, exactly. So you were 16 when you first did your first show, huh?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And didn't you play football also, Lee? Because I remember reading that you broke your leg like twice, and then that's how you sort of got into bodybuilding.
I sure did. It started out as football.
Okay.
You know, getting stronger and wanting to not get my butt kicked on the field. So I felt weight training would help me, you know, beat the guy in front of me.
Yeah.
So that's how I sort of began. But during my first year of football, I ended up spraining my right leg after mm-hmm. the second game. Put me back in the weight room. So I'm getting ready for the next year. I went in weighing roughly about 150, came out weighing 175. Then the senior year, high school football, after the sixth game, I broke my ankle. Went in weighing about 175, 180, came out weighing 217 pounds.
Wow.
I then knew that, hey, you know, maybe this bodybuilding thing is more where I need to be than football.
Yeah.
I still was able to get a scholarship because the education was very important.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the free education was a real nice deal.
Yeah.
But during my first, I guess my first year of heading off to Livingstone College in Salisbury, North Carolina to play ball for the summer, I then decided, listen, I would love to get more into the bodybuilding, but at the same time, bodybuilding wasn't offering a scholarship.
Yeah.
So I got a hold of one of my guidance counselors, and he made a few phone calls, and I was able to receive what is called the Basic Education Opportunity Grant, which allowed me to continue going to college and to forego football and put more of my energies into my studies and bodybuilding.
Hmm. Okay. What inspired you to get into bodybuilding? Did you start reading the magazines, or was there certain bodybuilders you saw who really made you want to be a bodybuilder?
Well, during that time, you know, the magazines were always available at the drugstores.
Yeah.
My parents would go out shopping. I would run to the magazine stands and read everything I could get my hands on. And I would see people like Berto Fox, Roddy Robinson, and of course Arnold. And that inspired me a great deal. And of course, during that time, Incredible Hulk was on the air, Lou Ferrigno. And man, after seeing all of that and being pumped, who wouldn't want to be a bodybuilder?
Right.
But when I was 6 years old, I dreamed of being Samson and Hercules.
Even
as a kid. I never would forget one day I'm hanging around in the yard with my older brother. And I picked up this boulder. And I visualized myself being Samson and thought I was strong enough to throw it over my dad's car. It didn't go over the car. It landed in that glass. My dad, after he heard that rock impacted the glass on his car, he came out with veins bulging in his neck. And when you talk about genetics, I got mine from my dad.
Right.
He had huge chest, big arms, thick thighs, big cash, and he said, who did it? And of course I said, my brother did. He got the crap beat out of him.
Oh, really?
So that dream of being Samson and Hercules, it started when I was 6 years old. I always wanted to be that.
Yeah.
It is so funny that when my dad looked at me, looked at him, my brother being 3.5 years older than me, he couldn't believe that this little bitty guy picked up this bowler.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't know that that was Samson and Hercules inside of that little body.
Yeah.
Once my brother beat the crap out of me every time he thought about it after that. But that's sort of how it began as a fantasy.
Wow. At that age. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm glad you mentioned your parents, because I remember reading a magazine when you first started coming on the national level. I think Greg Zulak wrote it. And he said that your mom was like 6 feet tall, right? And your dad was a big guy too. So you obviously got the best genetics from both of them, right?
Oh, yeah. Genetics is a huge part of having a good foundation to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, it does put you at an advantage, but then it can also be a disadvantage
mm-hmm.
because a lot of athletes that I've known with great genetics, because they didn't have the desire and heart, didn't go far.
Yeah.
I look at one of my good buddies, Russ Rich Gaspari, and I knew Rich's mom and dad, who were small people.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see the muscle anywhere on his dad. His dad, although his dad was a real hardworking man.
Yeah.
But Rich had to work hard for everything he got. And because of having that heart and desire, it made him one of the best the sport has ever known.
Right.
So you can't throw everything into genetics. You know, I was blessed to have him, but also blessed to have the desire to be the very best that I could be in the sport.
Yeah. Now, reading that article of muscular development, after you did your first contest at 16, you said you did another, you did the same show, right, a year later, and you were like 25 pounds heavier.
Yes, I sure did. Matter of fact, staying consistent to the training, consistent to the nutrition, and consistent to, you know, everything that I've read, you know,
yeah.
One of the people that I really drew to a lot and still admire today is Robbie Robinson,
mm-hmm.
and Roy Callender. Everything that Robbie and Roy would write, I would mimic it.
Hmm.
You know, love Robbie's back. I love his chest. His arms is out of this world. I never got Robbie Robinson on. I like to think that I got the chest. I got the back.
Right.
You know, I got the legs and those things. But his bicep, Robbie still, I feel, have the best biceps ever.
Yeah.
Perfect peaks on both sides. And Roy
right.
Callender, Roy's back was so thick.
Yeah.
His lumbars would hang with beef.
Right,
you know,
right.
So I always wanted that look, man. So
yeah.
I guess that's where I got my back from.
Yeah.
And then for Franco Colombo, golly, Franco was the same height even when you roll him on his side. He was so wide.
Right.
So, man, those were the best backs in the business there.
Talk about some of the training you did, because when I was reading that article, you said that the guy who owned the gym was a power lifter, and he showed you that those heavy basic movements really added to your physique and really helped build the foundation for bodybuilding.
Oh, yes. In order to be a great bodybuilder, you have to use a large portion or percentage of powerlifting movements.
Right.
You have to develop your foundation. And I don't know if you remember, but years ago, before the NPC began, the AAU was sort of in charge of bodybuilding, but powerlifting meets. And what would happen at the end of the day, you would have your bodybuilders to come on stage sometimes at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
After powerlifting meets had finished.
Right.
So I've been on stage at 1 o'clock in the morning before. So during that entire day, I had the experience of watching power lifters do their thing,
mm-hmm.
and to get knowledge and information from that. So that helped me a great deal, along with the owner of the fitness center, which is called Nautilus Fitness Center, that I train out of in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and the YMCA. They had power lifters there. And so I was able to learn the importance of bench pressing, proper form, proper technique, and also rep range when it comes to developing mass, because it is different.
Yeah.
It's different. But once you develop that foundation, you can, the sky's the limits beyond that.
Yeah.
So I really attribute powerlifting to a great deal of my success. Now, of course, in the world of bodybuilding, we try to implement both of them, you know, foundational for powerlifting, and then, of course, the bodybuilding, rhythmic, quality style movements to get the shape and the form of the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
You have to put the two together. Because bodybuilding is so high in repetitions, you got to be careful not to try to use power movements in high repetitions. If you do that, you will tear yourself up.
Yeah.
And we see a lot of that in athletes being injured.
Okay. Also talk about the training you did back then, Lee, because people today may not realize, but back in like the 70s, there weren't a lot of gyms and there weren't a lot of machines. And I see a lot of guys today, a lot of young guys today doing a lot of machines, a lot of cables. But back in the day, all we really had was barbells and dumbbells. And there were real serious gyms. There were smaller gyms, but it was guys in there that really wanted to lift heavy and train hard. So you were doing a lot of movements like bench presses, squats, barbell rows, and things you learned from the magazines, correct?
That's correct. there's nothing like the foundational movements is what gave bodybuilding its life and bodybuilders their life.
Yeah.
The best physiques in the world began that way. And the best physiques I feel in the world today are still using the same training principles.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I emphasize to younger athletes, you know, before you go to a cable crossover, develop a chest first.
Right.
So that goes back to your basic foundational movements. You shouldn't be doing cable curls for biceps when you haven't done barbell or heavy dumbbell curls to develop the muscle.
Right.
So
right.
A cable has its place, but not in the foundational development stages of a physique. I only use cables to polish, and that's when I'm getting ready for a competition.
Right.
You know, last so many months or so before a competition. But other than that, off season is always using, you know, your fundamental basic movements. You can't get away from
them. Right, right. So now when you're competing, let's go to 1979. That was the year you won the Teenage Mr. America. And I think you were also in a contest with Phil Williams, right, who eventually went and won the Nationals a couple of years after you did. And I think he beat you in that one show, the Coastal USA, and then you beat him at the Teenage America, correct?
Yeah, that's right. They gave Phil a gift.
Oh, really?
He was given a gift. You know, they apparently they felt sorry for him, you know, out so far and all of that.
Uh-huh.
But Phil was a great guy. I love Phil. You know, we had a wonderful time together, it's, you know, back during that time. And, you know, it was a very special time. You know, it's always different when you're learning the sport.
Yeah.
The oil, your backstage, it's all about fun of it. You know, it's all about the experience and so forth. And I never will forget that. It was very good, a great learning experience for me. I think a lot of time the exposure to bodybuilding from where I'm from, a little town called Bob Murray, South Carolina.
Yeah.
That's I never even wanted to miss South Carolina, you know. So the experience and the comparison to some of the other athletes maybe come from places like California, New York, or Florida with a degree higher.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt in some ways, presentation wise, they were at a slight advantage.
Okay.
As far as the physique is concerned, you know, you can have the greatest physique, but you don't have the ability to display it.
Yeah.
That can put you at a disadvantage. And I felt that's the way it was for me during that time. And of course, I was a taller athlete, you know, hitting the stage at 5'11", over 5'11" is tall.
Yeah.
And with that, it takes a longer period of time to develop. But once you get it with height, you are forced to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm.
Phil was a short athlete.
Yeah.
So that gave him an advantage for having size a lot earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But when I caught up, I had him for lunch.
So let's talk about that Teenage Mr. America. That was in Detroit. And people today may not realize, because the teenage bodybuilding has sort of really died off compared to what it was back in the 70s and 80s. But the teenage divisions back then were incredible, right? I mean, there was a lot of competitors and really good quality competition.
Eddie Brown. Do you remember Eddie Brown?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Eddie looked great. He looked like miniature Robbie Robinson.
Yeah.
Great biceps, great chest. And of course, you had Phil during that time. It was some awesome guys during that era. And some of them went on to become great champions.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them, remember there was one kid named Palopa, he won the Atlantic, he won the Coastal USA, the Teenage Coastal USA.
Okay.
That was put on by Doc Neely.
Yeah.
Back during that time. He won it, and I think I placed second to him.
Okay.
But he was a great athlete, but I haven't heard or seen anything since that time. He was there at the Teenage America, too.
Okay.
I beat him in that particular competition. But there were some awesome teenagers back then. And there are some great ones coming up now as I travel to different parts of the country, you know, showcasing my IFS certification program. I get to talk to a lot of athletes and particularly doing athletes meetings. So I get to meet a lot of the young up and coming guys.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed at what I've seen. I've seen some Frank Zanes out there.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen any mass monsters, but I've seen some young men that really got it going on with the small waist, the mm-hmm. nice taper, you know, and I hope they maintain that because, you know, a lot of people are going for the mass now and they're losing that nice balance that
yeah.
people are drawn to that made our sport popular.
Yes, absolutely.
But I'm seeing a re-emergence of that.
Yeah.
That is starting to reemerge in the new physique. Sean Rowland is out there. Of course, Phil Heath is a nice version of the tapering waist and so forth.
Yeah.
So I like what I'm starting to see now. So bodybuilding, I think, is trying to recapture his soul.
Yeah.
What it is.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. I just saw a kid at the Southern States, Peter Potter show out in Fort Lauderdale about a week or two ago, and he won the teenage and they also gave him the most promising award. And this kid just wasn't a big guy. He was only a bantamweight, but just great genetics, small waist. His muscles really popped. And I interviewed him afterwards and he said his idol was Frank Zane.
Yeah.
And he said he wants to develop a physique like Frank Zane. He learned his posing from Frank Zane. So I thought that was really great to hear, you know?
Yeah, it is great to hear and to see.
Yeah. So after you won that Teenage Mr. America, Lee, how did you feel? I mean, did you feel you've got really a great future in the sport of bodybuilding? Because to win a big national title like that, that had to make you feel on top of the world, huh?
Oh, man, it felt great. I mean, because I've looked at people like Dennis Tenorino. I think Dennis Tenorino won the Teenage America.
Yeah.
Chris Dickerson did also.
Borico, yeah.
The Borico, several guys won that show. And it said to me that, listen, if you've achieved becoming the best built teenager in the United States, then that says that there's a probability if you continue to work hard and sacrifice that you can go on to the next level. And so, man, I was fired up more than ever. And a year or so later, at the age of 20, the Mr. USA came around.
Yeah.
That was being held in Florida. I think Peter Potter or John Meese put on that particular show. Okay. And I played four.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa, man, you know, played four amongst these giants. And I was the second largest athlete in the event. I think I weighed 224 pounds then.
Wow. I remember reading that. Yeah. They said they mentioned the fact that you were 20 years old and you were one of the biggest guys on the show.
Yeah, man, that was, wow. I was really on fire at that.
Now, how did that feel going into a big national level show against open men, you know, so you're competing against any age?
That felt incredible, you know, because I think Dave Rogers won that particular show.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you got Georgia, then you got South Carolina. At the time, I was in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and then Dave was here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Spartanburg, Georgia at the time, training at Doc's Gym. So I felt good about that, and I felt I had a chance, you know, and looking at the competition, my posing still needed some work. I mean, you know, how many guys around the town, you know, where I live, actually knew how to pose? But they had a couple of guys who had competed in the past, but they still wasn't within reaching distance to sort of tutor me in that area. We had great guys like Joe Means. We had Sonny Arnold. We had Ron Blackman.
Mm-hmm.
Friend of mine, Danny Rogers. Danny showed me a few things when I started training at the YMCA. So we had a few good people that was good. And another guy, a guy named Keith Benefield. All these are guys from that South Carolina area that were in competition, that had competed before. So as I saw them presenting, you know, at the stage, you know, in competition, I got a bit here and a bit there.
Yeah.
So that was enough to keep me rolling.
What was your weight from the Teenage Mr. America to 1 year later when you did the Mr. USA?
I weighed 213 pounds of Teenage America, and I was 224 for the USA.
Okay.
So I put on roughly about 12 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, whew, man, and that's a lot.
That is a lot, yeah.
But then again, I just know in my heart, I've never been a light heavyweight. I've never been a light heavyweight.
Yeah.
Because my mom has never been a light heavyweight either. You know, so, and again, it goes back to your genetic blueprint.
Right, right.
That made a huge difference. And, of course, working hard, and eating good, and staying on top of all the other things you got to do right. The right training programs, you know, the powerlifting foundation. So all of those things made a difference in making me the person, making me the young champion that I had become.
Yeah. Now, after that, I believe I remember reading you had wrist surgery, right? And then you took a year off.
Right, right. I had what is called a ganglion cyst on my left wrist.
Okay.
And which caused pain when I'm trying to bench press or curl and that sort of thing. So I had to have it removed. And during that time, of course, there was no weight training going on.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine opened a fitness center called the Olympian Fitness Center in Swanbury, South Carolina. You know, it's amazing. Just all of us, we were in college together. And so after we finished our last year in college together, we said, hey, man, let's get together and open up a gym.
Yeah.
So both our parents borrowed money, and we opened a gym with, I think, about a $10,000 investment, you know, plumbing and all of that stuff. Of course, our dads jumped in there and helped us, and we got it up and going. But that was like the haven for us. And then a lot of other younger guys coming up. So we had, I mean, it was just fun. Just training, eating, training, eating, training, eating.
Yeah.
That's all we did. We just lived to train.
Right.
And that was an awesome time. And I really feel that was one of the most beneficial parts of my development.
Mm-hmm.
We would take pictures, try new exercises, add this, that. I never will forget, I started doing the trap movement where I would bring the bar behind to the rear, my back,
right,
and bring it up just like so to the rear because your trap's off to the rear.
Yeah.
Tried that. I said, okay, let's take a picture of before and after. So we took a picture of just when we first got started with that particular movement, took another one 6 weeks later. Could not believe the difference.
Really?
Huh. And that became a stable in my trap development.
Yeah, yeah. I remember you always did that exercise.
Yep, it worked, man. And we figured that out at the Olympian Fitness Center.
So you took 81 off, and then in 1982, that's when the MPC really got started. And I believe you did, what was the local show you did, Lee? Was it Coastal USA?
The Atlantic USA.
Oh, Atlantic USA.
Atlanta,
okay.
Georgia. So that was my opening qualifier in 1982.
Yeah.
And I came down for that show. And at that show, there were several guest posers. Tony Pearson was one of them.
Okay.
And, of course, Tony, he was always in fantastic shape.
Yeah.
That is another all-time great physique, Tony Pearson.
Yeah, absolutely.
The vacuum. Great lats and his presentation was out of this world always.
Yeah.
So it was there that I met him. And after the show, probably in the middle of the show, I had a lot of people come up and compliment me and said, man, you look just as good as Tony Pearson, not better. So that really, you know, got me going after hearing that. And then Tony, of course, greeted me and said hello. And I won that show, which then qualified me for the Junior National. You know, and so I was on the way after that. And then the Junior Nationals came up a few months later. And see, and with those who are watching us by Skype, but we'll be watching the show.
Yeah.
During that time, there was several qualification rounds you had to make it through. You just couldn't turn pro by winning the NPC Nationals.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, 1982 was the first year for the NPC Nationals.
It was, yeah.
So I first qualified by winning the Atlantic USA, which was a regional show qualification. Then it allowed me to qualify for the Junior Nationals, which I don't know, but I think I could have skipped over the juniors, I believe. I'm not sure. But anyway, I entered the Junior Nationals, which was held in New Orleans. Tony Little was in that particular show, and I won that one.
Mike Quinn, too, right, Lee?
Was that now?
Mike Quinn, he was in your class too, right?
Yep, Mike Quinn. And Mike was a monster.
Yeah.
Man, he had some guns on him.
Yeah.
Wow. So After winning that show, I then qualified for the NPC Nationals. So, but the Junior National was the first NPC event. So I won that one in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Then the NPC National was held in New York. And I won that one. And man, after doing that, next thing you know, you have the IFBB World Championship.
Yeah.
And I headed to Belgium and competed with guys from all over the world for that particular title. And at the end of the night, to my surprise, I was the heavyweight, you know, IFBB World Champion.
Yeah.
And I knew at that time, man, I'm on the way. And I'm standing there, you know, the after party. And the gentleman from Germany, promoter from Germany, walked over and said, Lee, we'd love for you to come back over and do a guest appearance. And I'd never, you know, okay, I'm getting paid.
Right.
I'm getting paid to trying to make some money.
Right, right.
You know, and not knowing how to negotiate what to ask for, I turned to Mr. Mannion, Mr. Jim Mannion, who, of course, was the founder of the NPC. And I told him, I said, Mr. Mannion, I never did this before. Can you help me out? And he negotiated it for me, you know.
Uh-huh.
I got, you know, a nice chunk of change for the event, flights back over. So there you go. So my career just began to take off then. So,
yeah.
Man, it was a nice payday, awesome experience, and I was on the way after that.
Now, did your physique change a lot throughout that year, Lee? I mean, from the Atlantic USA to the Junior Nationals to the Nationals, did it get better every contest?
You know, I strongly feel it did, because you had at the Mr. USA, 1980 Mr. USA, I weighed 224. Not as much muscle quality, I felt, as going into the Atlantic USA. I have a lot more muscularity going to Atlantic USA.
Okay.
Yet I only weigh like 222.
Okay.
So I'm kind of smaller. Then a few months later, going into the
Junior Nationals.
Junior Nationals, I weighed roughly around 224, around 223, you know, not a whole lot, maybe a year there. Then going into the NPC Nationals, I weighed 226.
Okay.
So that's on roughly around, since the Atlantic USA to the NPC Nationals, about a period of, I think, probably about 6 months.
Yeah.
At least around 4 pounds.
Okay.
And listen, I was laying brick. I was laying brick at the time. That was my other job, laying brick.
Really?
Plus I was working at the, I had my gym and laying brick at the same time. So
wow.
I was shredded to pieces when I hit the NPC Nationals. I actually won the NPC Nationals. I was a bit flat.
Uh-huh.
Coming from one of my friends who helped me out a great deal, and I trained out of his gym, a guy named Michael Hawkins. I trained at the Greenville Athletic Club, Greenville, South Carolina. And he said, Lee, you're a little bit flat. He says, yeah, you won because you were so muscular, but yet you were a bit flat. So anyway, a week later, maybe 2 weeks later, was the IFBB World Championships. And within those 2 weeks, I went from 226 to 232.
Wow.
So I filled out
and
won the IFBB World Championship at 232 pounds. I looked fuller. The vascularity was still there. The muscles popped a lot more. So I learned a lot in just that short period of time. You can't train like a horse and eat like a bird. Carbohydrates are not your enemy.
Yeah.
You just have to know how to manipulate them in order to get a specific look. And so I was on the way after that. I had learned a lot, had grown and put on, got at least 6 pounds of muscle fuel, glycogen.
Yeah.
You know, just right. It had to be the right balance, or else the spill would have taken place. The spill didn't happen because, you know, I manipulated the right way. And there you go. Gave me the results. I hit the stage. Bam, there you go. IFBB World Champ.
Now, we did an interview a couple years ago at the Southern States, and you said something interesting. We were talking about that period in your life. And you said, when you come back in 1982, you're going to shock the world with your physique. So,
yeah, sure did, man. You're talking about cocky.
Yeah. Whoa.
You know, after I had the surgery back in 1980, I think around 81, I had the surgery right after the placing fourth in the USA.
Okay.
I had house surgery. And then that after the surgery, the recovery. And so during that recovery time, I had a conversation with my buddies that we, you know, trained at the gym together. And of course, Shirley, who is my wife now, was my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting there, you know, having a meal, snack during the gym. And I made the statement. I said, in 1982, I will shock the world of bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. I spoke that in 1980. I said in 1981.
Yeah.
I was on the way to making my comeback. I would shock the world of bodybuilding because no one has ever really, you know, little town guy coming from nowhere.
Yeah.
In North Carolina, California, you know, Ron Koontz and all of these guys from
right.
all over the place. They had a magazine coverage, but here I am, this country bumpkin, who's nobody ever heard of, you know, other than I slide in and slide out. No real PR going on.
Right.
Stepped out of nowhere. And in 1982, I did that. I hit the stage and, you know, the Atlantic USA, the first time around, the NPC Nationals, Junior Nationals, the first time around, NPC Nationals, the first time around, IFBB World Championship 1982, the first time around. So I did exactly what I spoke that I would do, but leave you me, I worked my tail off for it.
Yeah.
Don't forget training for the NPC Nationals. Me and Shirley was at the gym late in the evening, and I'm on the bike and training my butt off, training my butt off, and I said to her, "If I do not win the NPC Nationals, I am going to move into my profession, which was youth counseling.
Okay,
that's what I have my degree in, because I'm a realist." That's the way. I either believe you have it or you don't.
Yeah.
I don't believe in wasting time or wasting energies on things that, you know, there's going to be some people can do that. And I think the good Lord heard me say it too. It's okay, son, I'm going to give you this thing. You're going to win it. Because when I said one time and one time only, I meant it. And so I won it the first time around.
Wow.
Won the IBB World Championship the first time around. Olympia, I got it the second time around.
Now going into that Nationals League, looking around at your competition, it was like you said, the first year. So you may not have known any favorites that were going in. But you had Matt Mendenhall, who came out of nowhere. He made a splash at that show. And then you had Bob Paris, who came from California, and also Mike Christian came from California. They had won a lot of shows out there, Mr. Los Angeles, Mr. California, and they were at the Nationals. So looking at your class, you also had Tim Belknap, remember, coming back from 1981 because he was trying to get on that world championship. He was trying to get to the universe again. So looking at these guys, how did you feel you were going to stack up? Were you nervous at all, or did you feel you had them all?
Well, you know, one thing about being on the other side of the world, not in California, they were only photos in a magazine to me.
Yeah.
I've never, you know, I didn't have competition where I lived. You know, Spartanburg, South Carolina, you know, the guys that were buddies to me, like some of the older guys. One guy was Phil Outlaw. He was the world most muscular man several times.
Mm-hmm.
He was also the physique chairman of South Carolina at one point. So these are the kind of guys I looked up to and I relied on as far as, you know, setting an example of, and all of them was known to be ripped. I mean, super ripped and muscular.
Mm-hmm.
That was always their forte and the mission when they hit the stage. So that same mindset was mine. So comparing to a Christian or a pair of Bob Paris or Matt Mendenhall, I never made a comparison as far as, okay, this is who I got to be. I never did that. I've always strived, and at that time, strived to be better than I was the last show. Mm-hmm. You know, what I had on my wall, I painted on my wall when I was a youngster, and I made a t-shirt and painted a picture, was Robbie Robinson. Mm-hmm. I felt Robbie was one of the greatest physiques of all time. And I felt that if I could create a physique, small tapering waist, vacuum, nice bicep, flowing lats, nice legs, nice calves, then, you know, I'm at the top of my game.
Yeah.
Everybody else would have to beat that, because that's who the magazine said was the top of the line. You know, I understand, you know, there was Frank Zane, there was Robbie, there was rivalry going on, but, and, you know, I think Frank have a different type of physique in a different category.
Yeah.
But when it comes to overall mass, a monster that hits biceps, side, chest, back, that was Robbie Robinson. It wasn't Frank.
Right.
Frank worked hard. Robbie was a monster.
Yeah.
Period. And I felt if I could take that package to the stage, then I could be, I was the one to beat.
Yeah. So now going over to the World Championships after you win that Nationals, was that your first time going to Europe?
Yes. Yes, it was. Matter of fact, I hadn't gotten a passport or anything until I was urged by Mr. Jim Mannion. He said, Lee, you want to go ahead and get a passport? I said, oh, really? You know, I had no idea,
right,
you know, that that would be a possibility of what was happening. So apparently he saw something of my physique or something in me.
Oh, he said that before the Nationals.
Well, before the Nationals. I think after the Junior Nationals.
Yeah.
He said, did you gotten a passport or anything? Because I wasn't aware that, okay, after you win the Nationals, then you go into the IFBB World Champion. I knew that there's a way to get there, but as far as knowing about a passport, I didn't know anything about that.
Right.
Nobody ever mentioned that to me
until
he said, which I'm glad he did, because I went out of it and said, Lee, you ready to go? Go where? You know.
So how did that contest go, Lee? You beat Gunnar Rosbo, who was second the year before. And you also beat, I think, Ralph Mueller, right? Big Ralph Mueller.
Oh man, Ralph was the biggest guy I ever seen in my life. He was a monster. You know, we're great friends even today, but it was a real an awesome experience standing on the stage in a whole nother country with guys from everywhere competing against each other, you know, and speaking different languages. And what was funny, I never will forget, we saw a lot of the European guys right before going on stage. We saw them sipping on wine.
Oh, really?
You know, so here's Lee Haney, Jimmy Gobert, Moses Maldonado, and Dale Riplinger. And we was watching all of this is going on.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, why are you guys sipping on wine? I said, man, well, it brings out more vascularity. I said, really? So let me try that, you know? I took a little sip of wine. Man, I was so dizzy because it was something that us American guys, we never heard of that before.
Right, right.
And I just said, oh, please, don't let me stumble while I'm on stage. Because it was that bad, you know, but it was an awesome experience, and we made friends for life. You know, I Facebooked Gunnar Rosbo.
Oh, really?
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And Fair de May. So thanks to the modern day, media technology.
Yeah.
We can still reach out and say hello and exchange pictures, find out what we're all doing as dads. Gunnar is now grandpa.
Really?
You know, so it's just amazing.
Wow. That's great. And you guys had a great pose down at that show too. You're all over the stage.
Oh, yeah, I know, we get the picture of me and Rolf Mueller. Rolf got his hand on my shoulder, almost on my head. I'm a little bitty guy, and we're doing these leg shots and pose downs together.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. That's one of my most memorable experiences is winning that IFBB World Championship and standing on stage with guys from all over the world.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely. Amazing.
Yeah. Now, when did you first meet Joe Weider? Was it right after that show?
Yes, after that show, Bill Reynolds, mm-hmm. who was editor-in-chief of Muscle and Fitness at the time, gave me a call and said he would love for me to come out to California and Joe would love to see and meet me and so forth. And so they sent a ticket. I jumped on the plane, went out there, and walking to the Weider Center was absolutely incredible. I mean, everyone wanted to meet Joe Weider because it was the magazine that got all of us excited, that helped educate us. And it was absolutely amazing. And I'm standing there, you know, prior to meeting Joe, and Bill is there in the office. I'm standing there with Bill. And then he said, oh, Lee, I was telling him that one of my favorite guys, Robbie Robinson. He said, well, Lee, Robbie is here today. I said, oh, really? He said, yes, I want to introduce you to him. And so Robbie was standing just not too far down the hall. And so Bill took me down to meet Robbie. I shook his hand and said, well, I still have an autographed dollar. But I had Robbie to put his name on a dollar.
Oh, really?
I still have it today. That was incredible. And he said to me, he said, Lee, I was at home. You know, Robbie don't talk a lot, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't have a sort of a quiet, reserved nature. But he said, Lee, I was at home, you know, resting, and I heard my wife yell out, hey, baby, come quick. Come check out the TV. He said, there's somebody on him that reminds me a lot of you. Hmm. And it was a picture of me at one of the shows, one of the physique shows that they were televising. And he reminded me of that. Wow. He said, when I saw that, I said, that guy does look like me. So anyway, that was the ultimate compliment coming from Robbie.
Yeah. So now you start your pro career right away in 1983, and you do the pro world championships in Atlantic City, right? In New Jersey.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, that was awesome. Matter of fact, Greg DeFerro was there. I think Johnny Fuller.
Yeah. Muhammad McAway won it.
Right? Muhammad McAway.
Yeah.
Magical Egyptian. And, of course, he won it. And I think I took third, I believe.
Yeah, and Robbie was in it too, third. Right? Wasn't Robbie in it?
I think Robbie was.
Yeah.
But that was amazing for me because here I am standing on stage with guys that I read about them in the magazines. They were people that I looked up to and admired, and there I am. You know, I was the youngest there. You know, I was sort of like the new kid on the block.
Yeah.
And so blown away with what I was experiencing at that time. And at the end of the day, I got a little check, you know. I was able to take some money home, and that was good. I'd like to have won the event, but there were some things that I needed to work on, you know. At that time, you know, you, as a youngster, you think, hey, I look at my poser routine, you know, look at it, I said, wow, I needed a whole lot of work.
Uh-huh. And that was a great event, too, because it was on TV. It was on CBS, I think, and Arnold was there.
That's right. It was, man, that was awesome. I loved that. They're in Canada. I think Montreal, I believe.
Okay.
I think it was, it was awesome.
Okay. And so that right after that, then you do the Night of the Champions in New York, which was a really big show, and you win. You beat Greg DeFerro, and you beat a lot of the guys that you know were in that show also.
Yeah, that was awesome because, matter of fact, a week before that, me and Shirley had just gotten married.
Oh, really? That's right.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah,
just
okay.
Married, and after winning the New York Night of Champions, that gave me a little extra cash. So we did to go to Hawaii to do a guest appearance for Mitt and Dottie.
Yeah, yeah.
He was great friends of Arnold, and they were just awesome and huge as far as developing bodybuilding in Hawaii.
Right. So
they were dear friends of mine and Shirley's, you know, both of his past. But I dealt with that experience. But, yeah, the New York Night of Champions was awesome.
Yeah.
So to win that show, as you know, during that time, you had the Mr. Olympia and the New York Night of Champions. There was other shows like the World Cup Grand Prix, but the New York Night of Champions was very special.
Right. Now, were you living in California then, Lee, or were you still in South Carolina?
I was in California then.
Yeah.
In California then, and when we got married, Shirley went home 2 weeks before our wedding date, which was May 14th, 1983, 2 weeks before that. And I came home a week prior. We got married, then hit New York and won that, and then hit Hawaii. So we're on the way after that.
Wow. All right, so then we go into your first Mr. Olympia in 1983 over in Munich, Germany. And how were your feelings going into that show? It's your first Mr. Olympia. Were you did you feel like you were going to be one of the top guys? Were you looking at any other guys thinking they might, you know, they're the guys you have to watch out for?
Well, you know, that first Mr. Olympia was it was really challenging. You know, the other things, okay, we just rolled with the punches. And then the New York Night of Champions gave me, you know, a big boost of confidence.
Yeah.
And, hey, you know, I can stand on stage with the pros, you know, and I gain a bit of experience. But what happened at the New York Night of Champions goes back to the lack of experience as far as I feel my placing. Well, a couple of things. I peaked 4 weeks prior to the New York Night, before the first Olympia, at 243 pounds.
Wow.
Arnold saw me at World's Gym, and he was amazed. He said, Lee, how are you looking this well 4 weeks away from the show? He said, you look like in peak condition now. And I was. Did I mean to be? I don't know. What happened at that point, I went into the show, which was a month later. My weight came from 243 down to 233. I dropped 10 pounds.
Hmm.
10 pounds of harder muscle.
Yeah.
So no longer did I have that nice, balanced, pump full look. I had sort of I had flatline.
Yeah.
At 233 pounds, that was only 3 pounds more than I weighed when I won the IBB World Championship a whole year later.
Right.
So all of the hard earned muscle I gained in all seasons to prepare for that show, I ended up losing.
Right.
Because of a lack of experience. And I always go back to say to a lot of the athletes, you cannot train like a horse and eat like a bird. I wasn't experienced and knowing that as your intensity level increased, so much your nutrition increased.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure to make adjustments in your protein and in particular carbohydrate balance.
Yeah.
As metabolic rate speeds up.
Right.
So I lacked that experience, you know, lacked knowing my body at that particular time. And so as a result of being too structured, because a lot of what I did in the past was, yes, I kept notes. I wrote down what I did right and maybe what I did wrong.
Right.
But I still didn't have the knowledge to make adjustments as far as, okay, I started out on 3,000 calories. You know, now all of a sudden I'm dropping weight. Maybe I need to increase it by another 300 calories or 500
mm-hmm.
calories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without, you know, and not making adjustments is what I know without a doubt that got me in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Because your body will give you signals. The mirror will give you signals. You just have to be willing to make the adjustment. And at that time, I think because of the intensity of the meet and the importance, well, let's say, of the Mr. Olympia and going into the first pro Mr. Olympia was like mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah.
And so a lot of the common sense things went out of the window.
Okay, yeah.
So I said, oh, no, this is the plan. I wrote it. I'm going to stay with it. I don't care what come to hell or hot water.
Right.
I'm going to stay with those 3,000 calories. I don't care if it kill me. And it almost did. So there you go. So it was a bit stressful. You know, I did know that I would be standing on stage with Frank Zane, which, you know, incredible girl Fox. Which was incredible, and I tried looking for that extra special angle. But going to the show, hey, I played third in my first Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, and you
which
beat,
wasn't bad at all.
You beat Frank Zane and you beat Stan Fox.
Yeah. And as I yeah, sure did. So I wasn't totally disappointed, but I was disappointed in the fact that I knew I was 10 pounds heavier 4 weeks prior to that.
Yeah.
At the after party, which the show took place in Munich, Germany. This was put on by Mr. Albert Busek, which did an incredible job. I was sitting at the table, you know, sort of away from the party, just sitting there, me and Shirley. And Arnold walked over and said to me, he said, Lee, you have a fantastic physique, a lot of potential, all the potential in the world. He said, but the one thing I saw that you lacked, and he didn't mention the fact he saw me 243 to 233. Maybe even at 233, I had what was needed to win that first show. But the thing that he saw, and nothing negative about my physique, I'm saying, well, Lee, you were flat. He didn't say none of that.
Yeah.
He said, your presentation lacked polish. That's what he said. And I believe 100% what he said was right on point. Because when you hit the stage with Frank Zane, Muhammad McCauley, Albert Beckles, all of these veterans, you better have yourself together. Yeah. And it's nowhere in the world at the age of 23. And that was my age, my first Olympia. Nowhere in the world that I had that type of experience. It wasn't there.
Yeah.
It wasn't enough time. I hadn't prepared myself. I mean, you're talking about guys who have been posing for 20 years or more.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're wearing Huggies, you know? So, but Arnold said to me, he said, Lee, once we get back to California, I want to introduce you to my posing coach. Because when she worked with you and get you better in your transitions and positioning your presentation, you'll be Mr. Olympia as long as you want to be.
Wow.
I took that advice, and I'm grateful till today for what Arnold said to me and the pointers that he gave me. So when I got back to California, I met Arnold at his office, and his posing coach was there, and he helped me. She helped me, and the rest was history.
I didn't know Arnold had a posing coach.
Yeah, sure did.
Wow.
You know, watch the way Arnold moved, transition.
Oh, yeah.
I always talked about posing big. When you're a big guy, you should pose big. You should take up the whole stage.
Right.
So these corners that he gave me. So when I did my three-quarter back, I was always spinning and opening up real wide and move with movement.
Right.
There's a lot of guys I see posing today. I see giants posing like Lee LeBrock.
Yeah.
Like Rich. You're not Lee LeBrock, you're not Rich. Lee poses to the best of his ability and have an incredible physique, but he stays in line with who he is. He's sort of a Frank Zane style, Muhammad McCauley style. So that's what he presents. You know, I'm more of an Arnold and a Robbie Robinson style. So I have to present big poses because I'm a bigger guy.
Right, right.
You know, so you see a lot of that today. I see big guys who just, their mindsets. I don't know. I guess you got a Rottweiler that thinks he's a Chihuahua. And it looked like it on stage, too.
Yeah. You mentioned Arnold. How was that meeting Arnold for the first time when you went out to California?
Oh, it was incredible. You know, I met him first when I won the IBB World Championship.
Okay.
Because he commentated there.
Oh, okay.
It was very, very nice and always very helpful. He told me, Lee, get to California. If anything you need, if I can help you in any way, you let me know.
Wow.
And so always been that way. And we still have an awesome relationship even today. You know, he applied to Atlanta, and that's where I am now. I'm in Atlanta. Arnold was part of what is called the Inner City Games.
Right.
So he headed up that particular organization, which is now after school program for kids.
Right.
But he would call, I have his team to call, then we'd meet up and go hit some of the inner city schools. So, I really appreciate his heart and what he does beyond, you know, just the bodybuilding world. He does it because of community-wide things that help young people.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. So now we go into 1984, and this is you took the whole year off. You only competed in the Olympia. And you also started training with Rich Gaspari that year, right?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, Rich lived with me and Shirley for a period of time. They're my home. Rich, he was a young bodybuilder. Met him there at Gold's Gym in Reseda because we both live in Sherman. We call it more Woodland Hills, not far from the Weider Center.
Okay.
So we sort of became good friends, and you know, he had just gotten to California from Jersey. Mm-hmm. And he stayed with me and Shirley for a while to help him out, help get him going. He was just a great person. So we became good buddies. His intensity level was out of this world. So Rich was one of the best training partners I've ever had.
You know? Yeah.
If you know anything about Rich Gasparri, you know that he's intense. He's intense in everything that he do, mm-hmm. from bodybuilding to business.
Right.
That's why he always wins, or he'll find a way to win.
Right.
And so it was great training with Rich, and to see him win the NPC Nationals, and then for myself to go on to win the first Mr. Olympic, that was an awesome combination. But little did I know, a few years later, he'll be knocking on my door. So it's almost like sleeping with the enemy.
Right.
You know? I showed him a little too much, you
right,
know.
Right.
But Rich, as far as the Olympians are concerned, I felt had the smallest amount, or the least amount of genetic gifts. But he had the biggest heart and the most determination.
Yeah.
It Rich compared to Matt Mendenhall, and I've trained with Matt Mendenhall. Rich would have Matt Mendenhall between a piece of bread for lunch,
mm-hmm.
peanut butter spread on it, eat him alive and leave nothing left. That was the difference. Matt had all the genetic potential. Rich had all of the heart.
Mm.
If I would have put Rich heart inside of Matt, then Matt would have gave me the hardest of times.
Yeah.
Because he was a real life he-man.
Yeah.
But he had the heart of a pussycat. He's my buddy, but hey, I got to call it like I see it. Rich, on the other hand, he would eat you up and spit you out. You sort of remind me, today's athlete remind me of Branch Warren.
Yeah.
Branch is like,
right.
Branch terrorizes, you know. Got a different kind of physique.
Right.
Totally different than mine, of the past. But what he has, and he takes it to the max.
Yeah.
Don't get in his way.
You told this story a couple of years ago when they had that Masters Olympia, and they had all you guys on stage, and you were telling a story about how a bunch of the guys from your gym wanted to beat up Rich because he was so intense, he was throwing weights around.
Rich was so intense, man. But when I say intense, he wasn't a nice guy at the gym. If you get in his way, he's going to tell you, get away from here, bum. I've heard him say that, you know. I walk up, you know, get away from here. We're trying to move out of the way. You know, he's like that. You don't get in his way.
Right.
That one of a lot of us said, Rich, you just can't do that, man. You got to calm down a little bit. But, you know, he got that Italian blood in him, man. He was never calm. He was always wired. He had a job to do and a vision.
Right.
And let nobody get in his way. And I never forget, I'm coming to the gym this evening to train, get a workout in. And I walk into a crowd of guys. You know, I see all the guys at the gym, so they're standing on the outside. They're having this conversation. I walk in the middle of the crowd and say, hey, what's going on, guy? They say, we talking about your training partner. Then the first thing I said, what did he do now? I knew he had to do something. So, man, they said, we're going to get him this evening. I said, man, don't get him. What did he do? We tired the way he talked to people. He's rude, and we're going to put us into this. I mean, he's a bunch of guys with muscles, too.
Right, right.
I'm talking about Pee Wee Herman here. These guys have muscles. I said, look, guy, don't beat him up. He's just a kid. I said, look, let me talk to him. You know, and just give me a chance. They said, okay, you better talk to him. If not, it's going to be it for him. I said, man, I'm going to talk to him. Don't beat him up. Please don't beat him up. Because of my diplomacy, all the guys, you know, I was training with everybody. All the guys loved
right,
me.
Right.
He laughed and so forth. Anyway, Rich never knew it happened. He never knew it happened until I mentioned it at the Legends Seminar. I said, Rich, you almost got killed one time. He said, oh, really? What happened? And I told him the story. But I did tell him, I said, look, Rich, after that, I said, man, listen, you have to learn to communicate differently. You know, when you're in the gym, man, you're not the only one here. So you have to use diplomacy and you got to be courteous. If not, that's going to not only impact you in the gym, but it's going to impact your business life, too.
Yeah.
cost. You know, it's your fans and people who like you that will buy your products. So you got to change your whole mindset. And believe you me, riches, you look at the rich now compared to the rich back then, it's two different people. So he's became extremely successful in business, extremely successful in his social etiquette. Right. So he's a different guy. He's a different guy, but still somewhere inside of him lurks a monster. He just knows how to control him better.
Well, when I did an interview with Rich, he told me that training with you really changed his training style, because he was training really heavy. He was bulking up. And he was training super intense, and you told him how to feel the muscle more. And as you always say, stimulate, don't annihilate the muscles.
Exactly. You know, Rich has a new book out, 51 Days, and he has a chapter in there called Fat Boy. That's what I called him when I first met him. You know, he was all bulked up, and I said, right. Well, fine. I said, you train hard, you're intense. I said, but you're a fat soul. I said, you can't flex fat. So we started, you know, working on some different things and, you know, teaching them the philosophy of filling the muscle, you know, the mind and the muscle link.
Right.
And that you can get what you're looking for out of a muscle without ripping it apart.
Right.
And you see a lot of that in bodybuilding today where guys are getting injured. You can see bicep tears, pec tears, quad tears, all this ridiculous stuff.
Right.
But you look at, you say old school bodybuilding, new school. Listen, when you look at the bodybuilders of the past, you didn't hear about Arnold tearing a bicep, mm-hmm. or Frank tearing a bicep, or, you know, Mike Mister tearing a bicep, you know, any of the Mike Katz, all of them got Robbie. You never heard of that.
Right.
We, because I learned from those great Olympians. To link the mind and the muscle together, you know, to stimulate. It doesn't take that much to stimulate the muscle. 75% of what you put it is what you put in your mouth. Stimulate the muscle and then feed it. So you don't have to rip it apart, because you want it to be there again tomorrow too.
Right.
When you get injured, you're not going to be able to train.
Right.
So you don't want that to happen. So that philosophy I ingrained in Rich, and he took it to the max. We were together a few weeks ago. San Jose, and Rich looked great even then. I mean, every time you see Rich, he looks great. I used to call him the professor. He wrote down everything that he would eat, his mm-hmm. supplement program. Everything was just so regimented with Rich, it thought out.
Yeah.
And I strongly feel that the training approach that Rich and I use, and the one that I instilled in him, has allowed us to be healthy even today. But then when I saw Mike Christian, in great health. I saw Sean Ray in great health. I saw Flex Wilder in great health. I saw Chris Cormier. None of us were limping with back injuries, knee injuries, hip injuries. We were all in great health. Mm-hmm. And that was something good to see.
Yeah.
You know, we all in good health. None of us said, well, man, I have a knee replacement, or I had a hip replacement, I had back surgery, a neck surgery. You know, because of using the right training philosophies.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about that 84 Olympia, Lee. That was your first win, and you mentioned your posing, and your posing was fantastic that night. I think that's still one of my favorite posing routines of all time. I believe you used the music from Excalibur, and you did something where in the middle of the routine you stopped, and you bent over, and you put your arms out, and the audience thought it was over, I think, at first, and they waited. And you had the audience's attention, and then you continued the routine, and you had this really powerful music, like you were saying. You used very powerful music, powerful poses. And talk a little bit about your experience in that contest, you know, going into that show, and you really had to feel like you were the dominant bodybuilder in that one.
Well, you know what? I went back after the third placing in the 1983 Olympia, and I wanted to find out first, where did I go wrong at?
Yeah.
And I went back and I studied my notes, and I got with a good friend of mine, Dr. Fred Hatfield, Dr. Squat.
Yeah, yeah.
Fred, you know, Fred was a professor in all of this nutrition and all of that. So we went back over the note and, you know, and studied here and found that. And it was pretty simple. Same thing that happened at the 1982 NPC Nationals. I was training like a horse and eating like a bird. I just didn't take enough calories in.
Yeah.
I just needed to increase my calorie intake. I did that and went into the 1984 Olympia. Guess what? 243 pounds. The same weight I was a year before.
Right.
Doggone it. You know, but I learned. But what I wanted to do with that new intro and with new knowledge and new information, I wanted to have a presentation that was different, that was unique. I had a chance to go see the movie called Excalibur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. I remember seeing that movie, but King Arthur had sort of lost himself. He had became disconnected to the land and to his people. When that happened, you know, everything started to dry up. You know, the land became worn looking, you know, no longer were the flowers blooming, and it was just a time of gloom. As they searched for the Holy Grail to restore him. So I sort of pictured myself as finding the Holy Grail and making good on the mistakes that I had made in the past for the last Olympia.
Right.
And I was amused to say that someone special is coming. A king is returning to bodybuilding. That's how I viewed it. King returning to bodybuilding.
Right.
I wanted to have music that would give that particular message. You know, because as you saw, as King Arthur was being revived, you saw him riding through the countryside, and as he passed each street, it would bloom. And everything would green up when he rode by, you know. So I was really amazed and psyched by seeing that. So that was the presentation that I wanted. So that music was the perfect one, the perfect choice, I felt. And I was taking 10 extra pounds on the Olympia stage, plus a posing routine that I had worked my tail off to make happen, you know, with the help of Arnold's posing coach, and just work. And believe you me, I spent hours in the office with Joe Weider. Joe helped me with my posing, standing on stage to make sure my waist had a nice small taper to it, knowing how to use the muscle. And I mean, he would work me extremely intensely in his office. And so when I hit the stage for the 1983, that posing routine was out of this world. And hey, the rest was history. They knew a new king had arrived.
Yeah.
And I'd be there for a long time to come.
And you were the new king, because since Arnold, I mean, you had Frank Zane win it 3 times, and then Chris Dickerson won it once, Samir won it once. So there was nobody really taking over, no big guy like Arnold that, like you said, a king that took over and dominated the sport, and you were the new king.
Yeah, I felt that, you know, if with height, if with symmetry, if with good balance and the right muscularity and a poised presentation, if I can present that, I felt that I can be Mr. Olympia for several times to come.
Mm-hmm.
Many times my heart will allow me to be hungry for it. I felt that.
Yeah.
And apparently that was the case, because I wanted, you know, with a nice lead, and I didn't have any boos from the audience, and people liked what they saw. I walked on the stage of 243 pounds. I think that was the biggest that ever happened at that particular point before the Miss Olympia, with a 32-inch waist and a vacuum. And great lats, and, you know, everything sort of fitting the way it should.
Yeah.
So, wow, I look back on that and like, man, that was really something.
It's good.
It was a real blessing for me.
It's a good thing you worked on your posing, too, because you had Muhammad McAway, who had a fantastic routine that year, who took second place.
Well, he would rip you apart, you know. And going back a bit, after placing third in the first Miss Olympia, I participated in the European Grand Prix circuit.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Went to Switzerland, and I think England.
Right.
Belgium. Muhammad waxed my butt all across Europe.
Yeah.
To the extent that at the end, I held him up on
right,
my shoulder.
Right.
Last year, you know, and crowned him as king, you know.
Yeah.
Although I could eat him, I could have put some sandwich, put him on some butter on it, and just ate him on a piece of bread.
Right.
But, you know, he gave me a lot of experience watching him and being a part of that whole deal and being around the great legends, man. I was totally in awe that I was there. You know, here's Jesse Wilcox and all of these great Olympians, man. I had a part to do with that. I was a part of that whole deal.
Yeah.
So that was the first Grand Prix and the last one that I participated in. But I felt that I gained a lot of experience. You know, your best experience is when you get your butt whooped.
Right. Talking about that too, Lee, when you picked up Muhammad, I thought that was, I know you didn't plan it like a marketing move, but I thought what a great way. I mean, I remember when you picked him up and he beat you for that last one. I remember that last one because you were getting better every show. And I remember reading the magazines. They said you really could have won that one. It could have went either way because Muhammad was ripped, but you were getting better every show and you really peaked, I think, at that last one. But he still beat you. And I think that was in London and you picked him up. And that picture made all the magazines, you know, and I think what it showed, what it showed everybody was that you were a champion, even in defeat, and that you congratulated him, not only congratulated him, you picked him up, you were happy for him. And I think that gave a great impression of you going into 84. And I think maybe that helped you even, you know, with your win.
Well, you know, something I think we're people, you know, the judges are human.
Yeah.
And, I think the IFBB is a organization and has a, the committees are such that they are businessmen, they are fathers, they are community leaders.
Yeah.
So I think the presentation of whoever it is being Mr. Olympia has to fall in line with what they want the general population to see.
Yeah.
What they want the world of bodybuilding to see as their representation. So not that I did it as a way of trying to promote that.
Right.
I was having a good time.
Right.
It was an honor to be on stage with all of those great champions. I was able to pick up Muhammad. If that had been Joseph Wilcox, he would have to stay on the ground. You know, so that was the difference. But I strongly feel that the sport and the fun of it is so important because we only get to go around one time.
Yeah.
And my experience, even in defeat, is a great experience. Ever you can do something that you love to do,
mm-hmm.
and you have fun at it, and you can laugh about it at the end of the day, and also make a living at it, then that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, one of the guys who were the top of the line at that was Tom Platz.
Mm-hmm.
I love Tom Platz. I've always watched Tom and admired how he carried himself, how he dealt with his fans and so forth. Tom was making a ton of money, even though he never won the Mr. Olympia. But it was because the way he communicated with his fans and the audience. He had those nice, cocky, kind of a warm way of winning his fans over. When he got ready to pop his leg, he'd run his hands through his hair and then he'd look, just smile, you know, pop, you know, with that leg shot.
Right.
And everybody would go crazy. So at the end of the day, what's important is how you impact the lives of people around you, how they feel about you, whether you're first or sixth place, and how you use your success in a way to continue to move the sport forward, but to also move yourself forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because those fans are going to buy your t-shirts, your photos.
Yeah.
They are the ones that are going to give you life beyond the stage. And as a result of the way I've tried to present myself as a professional bodybuilder, let alone Mr. Olympia, as a professional bodybuilder. That has given me life even beyond the stage.
Yeah.
So I still got fans who say, man, Lee, I remember growing up. And I have dads who say, man, you know, I had my little bitty boy. And, you know, he's a grown man now. And you took out time to take a picture with him. And you held him in your arms and all of this. And he was the last one. And you call him to the front. You know, when you hear stories like that, it makes you feel good.
Yeah, yeah. Did you, speaking of Tom Platz, I heard that you watched the 1981 Mr. Olympia. You were in the balcony and you saw that from as a fan, right?
I sure did. That was my first Mr. Olympia show.
Yeah.
And a bunch of guys from my gym, the Olympian Fitness Center. I say my gym, the gym between me and my partner. His name was W.C. Bain. We were partners together, you know, went to college together and all of that. So we gathered up enough money to rent a van. All of us guys sleeping in a hotel room together.
Right, right.
All of us sleeping on the floor, carts and all kinds of stuff. We went there to Columbus, Ohio to watch the Olympics, the one that Franco Colombo won.
Right.
Absolutely incredible, man. And that's where I saw Tom Platz in person. That's really where I had a chance to see the first lineup of professional bodybuilders.
Yeah.
Then I saw Arnold. You know, Arnold always wore the nice flannel shirts, you know, long sleeve. Looked like a big lumberjack, you know, with the nice lats and he didn't have the jeans on. I never will forget that picture, man. He was, you know, walking and coming out, you know, out of the place and walking around. I'm like, God. And everybody was so afraid, including myself, to, you know, to walk up and say something because you were just in awe.
Right.
So it's amazing how time has allowed, me to achieve the level of success that I have, and the same people that I was in awe of, I can also call friends.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's even today, that's incredible.
Yeah. Now, the 84 Olympia, one other thing I forgot to mention was Sergio Oliva came back at that show, and that was a big thing. You know, that was Sergio finally came back to the Olympia after, I think, 12 years or something, and you got to compete with, I'm sure, a guy you grew up admiring in the magazines.
Oh, yeah, Sergio, absolutely incredible. The myth.
Yeah.
You know, and people say, well, you know, you was in the show with Sergio Oliva. Did you? How did you feel beating him? I didn't beat Sergio. Nobody, you cannot beat a myth or a legend. I was just fortunate enough to be in his presence. Sergio, for the most part, came to do a guest appearance.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
Right.
And he's in incredible shape. To be on the stage with him, there still have not, even today, been another physique like his.
Right, I agree.
Like Mother Nature whoops up these different kind of combinations, and you know she does what she does. And Mother Nature, by the way, is God Almighty.
Mm-hmm.
He gives special gifts to people, and Sergio was one of those gifts. Arnold was one of those gifts. I was one of those gifts. Frank Zane was one of those gifts. You know, Larry Scott was one of those gifts. All of us have these different type of characteristics that only Mother Nature in her way can whoop up and make happen.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then the blueprint is thrown away. It can't be duplicated.
Yeah.
There's only one Muhammad Ali. There's only one LeBron James. Only one Michael Jordan. Only one Larry Bird. One.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be a duplicate. Magic Johnson. One. Right. Randy Holyfield. One.
Right.
Joe Eater, one.
Right. Did you get to talk to Sergio that day, Lee? Did you?
Just, hello, sir. It's an honor to meet you. I had the opportunity. There was an event that took place in Vegas at one of the Olympias, and all of the legends were brought there.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Shane. It was a sort of a Legends Day. Robin brought all of the Mr. Olympias there. And Sergio happened to be having breakfast early that morning. Of course, he was already there, and I was sort of tables away from him. But I made sure, I told the waitress, listen, I'm taking care of his check. Don't tell him who it is. I'm taking care of this gentleman's check. You know, so that was something I had the opportunity and the privilege to do for
him. Yeah.
You don't know it. I didn't want him to know it, but I had that much respect for him. His son is an awesome athlete.
Yeah, he is.
So he has some beautiful genetic blueprint.
Yeah.
So did he have the heart of his dad? I don't know. We have to see.
Yeah.
But his dad came from some real tough circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, to leave Cuba to come here and, you know, and overcome odds that were just absolutely incredible.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, so it remains to be seen.
Right. All right, so you win the Mr. Olympia, Lee, and how did your life change after that? Were you doing a lot of guest posings after that, after 84?
Yeah, a lot of guest posing. You know, I've gone to more than close to 30 different countries.
Wow.
Doing guest appearances, it became a lot of fun. Finally, I was making a living at what I love to do. You know, I purchased my first home. So with the first Mr. Olympia check, half of it went to purchase a home. So I had to put Ms. Haney in a nice place.
Right.
Because, you know, wives make babies. And so babies have, and moms got to have nests to put them in. So that was the number one priority for me. And from that point, you know, other opportunities came along. You know, I think I was the first to get a shoe contract.
Mm-hmm.
I had shoes for a company. I then had a show on ESPN, a Lee Haney's Championship Workout. Then I also have a show on the Trinity Broadcast Network, authored a couple of different books. So a lot of things just started to happen. I have my own fitness centers and, you know, it's just a lot of opportunity came my way. But I was conscious of the fact that I had to make opportunities or look for opportunities beyond the stage.
Yeah.
Because I mean, when you're on the top, there's nowhere to go but down.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to think not only in the present of continuing to train for the Mr. Olympia and getting ready for the next one, but you also had to sow seeds in the other end of business.
Yeah.
So that, hey, this isn't working. What do we do to continue to move to the next level outside of the stage?
Yeah.
So that's where the real work begins.
Right.
So it has to do a focus, well, a three-way focus, because not only was I Mr. Olympia, I was also a husband, then soon to be a father,
right,
and then a businessman. So all of that had to think about a lot of things at one time.
Right. So now you go to the 1985 Olympia, your second one, and you've got a lot of new guys coming in now, a lot of the new blood. Barry DeMay, Mike Christian, your old partner Rich Gaspari are all competing. How did you feel your chances were going into that? Did you worry about anybody, or did you feel you were still the guy to beat?
I was still the guy to beat.
Yeah.
Because I said, with that combination of height, size, symmetry, balance, and having learned how to peak properly, which I didn't know in 1983.
Yeah.
1984. I somewhat mastered it. I felt I could still be a little bit better. But in 1985, I thought I peaked perfectly.
Did you? Perfect. Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, seeing who my competition was, which, you know, of course, Mike was great, but, you know, there were certain things about physiques that you could sort of pick apart a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was strong in all of the areas that was needed to do a repeat.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you said one interesting thing there. I remember Rick Wayne was backstage and he was interviewing you guys for ESPN. And, you know, Rick always tries to stir things up. And he said, well, Lee, how many times are you going to do this? How many times can you win? And you get a great answer. You said, well, I think you just said it a little while ago. Every once in a while, Mother Nature whips up a great physique. And I'm grateful that during this era, I am that physique. But should she whip up one tomorrow, it's time for me to move on, right?
Yeah. That's exactly correct. I felt it was my era because Arnold had his era.
Yeah.
You know, Frank Zane had his era. You know, Ronnie had his. Jay had his, you know. So Mother Nature does her thing for that particular person at that particular time. Linda Murray. It's the same.
Yeah.
So embrace the moment and be true to Mother Nature. Don't abuse her. You do your part because she's already done hers.
Yeah.
You just have to do your part to continue to build upon that. Good nutrition, you know, good sound nutrition, sound supplementation, sound training principles and so forth. Don't tear yourself up. I never had poor muscle, torn muscle, anything crazy to happen, you know, by stepping outside of the basic principles that got me to where I was as a Mr. Olympic.
Yeah.
As a result, I was able to stay there and not end up injured and hurt.
Right, right. So now the next year in 86, it goes back to Columbus, and Rich Gaspari's looking good. He won the Pro World Championship, which when I talked to Rich, he said that's probably the best he thinks he's ever looked. So going into the Olympia that year, did you think Rich might have a chance?
Nope.
Obviously, no. Not a chance, huh?
And again, it goes back to what I said. Mother Nature done what she do. You know, you got a 32-inch waist, great lats, great bicep, great muscularity, great presentation. Then you win. Ooh, I think I was somewhere around 246 pounds then.
Okay.
So I put out an additional 3 pounds, you know, beyond, because I was, you know, I would normally gain about 2 to 3 pounds, you know, each year.
Yeah.
And that, again, gave me the advantage. 2 pounds on a 32-inch waist and everything fitting in the right place.
Right.
Perfect.
Right.
Not overdone. Perfect. The guys gained like 10 pounds. Okay, 10 pounds, what happened to the waist?
Yeah.
So we always emphasize, particularly with the true era of classic physiques, small waist, nice taper, vacuum, flowing physique, muscularity, presentation.
Yeah,
that's originally a great... new on the block. He was ripped and everything. But one thing that's different about a physique, you either have it or you don't have it. And that's the ability to project. That is something that is special and something that is very rare in physiques. Example, Frank Zane standing there athletically, Frank looks good. But when Frank Zane flexes, you say, where did that come from? How did this guy weigh only 195 pounds look like he now weighs 220?
Yeah.
When he flexes. Robert Robinson standing there, looked great. He does a double bicep. What in the world? Where did that come from? All of the same way, projection. Have the ability to project is not something you can train and get. You have to be born with that ability. But the muscles actually talk and speak a language of themselves. I had that. And so Rich didn't have that. Mike Christian didn't have that. Lee Labrador, Lee projects very well. He projected very well, but he's a smaller guy projecting. A bigger guy projecting is a monster.
Yeah.
If you can get that, you know, that's what happened. Then you have guys like Rolf Miller. Rolf didn't have a bit of Lou Ferrigno don't project. You know, Duren Yates is big, but he don't project. Ronnie is a monster. He projects. He projects crazy. He's a whole helicopter. You know? So that's something that you either have or you don't have.
Yeah. Well, I love what you just said about the classical physiques, and you added, you know, 2 or 3 pounds a year. I remember Frank Zane was like that during his reign. When he won 77, 78, 79, he wouldn't put on a lot of size, but it would be 2 or 3 pounds, but it would make a difference. On a
everything in the right place.
Right.
Balance, you know, and it looked, I mean, he was out, and then his presentation. Frank is a whole nother world.
Yeah.
Whole nother world.
Yeah.
Wow, with his projection, just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Presentation, you know, like I said, a presentation. I think that's what sort of gave him an edge above Robbie. You know, I think Robbie got the better physique, but the combination of Frank's ability to communicate his physique and the ability to project, particularly project as a smaller guy. Bigger guy projecting, you sort of expect it. But a little guy projecting, you don't expect that.
Right.
So it's a whole nother shot.
Yeah.
I still prefer Robbie's physique. I want to make that clear, though. You prefer Robbie's physique.
Right. Now, you just mentioned Lee Labrada. How did you feel when he first came on the scene? I mean, he was a, you know, a great bodybuilder, smaller guy, but great symmetry, always came in condition, great posing.
Yeah. Lee, absolutely incredible. You know, I would say Lee and Rich were about, you know, were about the same. I would look at them in sort of the same light.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, you know, I projected better than Rich, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He had the ability to project. You know, Rich was just ripped to pieces, you know, and just a very hard, he was a hard presenter too. Like, the reason why I gave him the name the Dragon Slayer, because he would definitely slay you if you you weren't ready, he would get you.
Right.
Lee was of you know, just classical. He's very classical in his presentation and so forth.
Yeah.
A lot like Muhammad Mukawi. A little bit, you know, different, but along those lines, you know, Rich wasn't a big guy. He's bigger than Lee. And he posed powerful, you know. So that was a little bit different. Two different style of physique, you know. And so you, I guess with the judges, they would have to sort of decide, make a decision on, okay, what are we looking for here? Because it could have gone either way.
Right.
And again, I felt my mass, and I overpowered Lee like I overpowered Rich. So, you know, I didn't never worry about either one of them.
Yeah.
Defeat me. Never was that a thought, you know.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about the 88 Olympia, because that's one of my favorite ones ever. That was in California, and everybody was in great shape that year. And that was the one that also did the weigh-in with the robes on.
And right. That was cool. Right?
Yeah. I remember a lot of the guys, when they weighed in, I was surprised at how light they were. Like, Mike Quinn was only 204, and Rich was only like 208. Lee Labrada was like 176. And you get on the scale, and you're 243. And you blew everybody away right there, I think.
Hey, that was an awesome show.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that bodybuilding had come to California.
Yeah.
Because that was, you know, that is the place.
Yeah.
You know, for bodybuilding. And the preparation there was awesome, too. There was this particular gym. Golly, I don't know, you may recall the guy who owned this gym. For bodybuilders, not a gym, it was a hotel with a restaurant.
Marina Del Rey, right?
Yeah, it was a Marina Del Rey.
Yeah.
A hotel with a restaurant.
Yeah.
Both of us combined together. Man, he would have these huge pancakes. God, I can't think of his name.
Joe Bucci?
Yeah, that's right. Joe Bucci. It was out of sight, man.
Yeah.
We loved that. It was fantastic. Then we had a chance to get real, you know, the sun, real sun for tanning.
Yeah.
I was almost blue black. You know, tanning there, the tan was nice and dark.
Right.
The skin was nice and tight and so forth. So I felt that I hit the stage in very, very good shape at that time.
Yeah.
And again, it was fun. I didn't have a fear of not winning. I think Barry to me was incredible shape.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Barry, I thought, I don't know how he placed.
Third. He got third.
To third, who was second?
Rich.
Rich was second?
Yeah.
Man, those guys was in the best of condition. I felt they thought that, well, if we get extra rip,
right,
then maybe we can get Lee.
Yeah.
You know, get Lee Haney. But anyway, again, with that combination, man, the size, 243, everything that I brought to the table was enough to keep me there again. And I mean, I don't know the difference. I don't recall seeing the difference in the score and so forth, but I knew that it was two things. Barry was ripped, but he was thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the things. He turned sideways, he was thin. Rich was ripped, but he didn't project, and he didn't have kind of muscle belly, the nice thick muscle belly.
Yeah.
When you hit the upper bicep or side chest, he didn't have those things going on.
Right.
He ripped and looked super standing to the front. So when you turn to the rear, the lats and the, you know, all the other things that make you a monster, he didn't, you know, he didn't bring it to the table.
Yeah.
I had those things. Again, it goes back to that formula that Mother Nature does once in a blue moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was my arrow. I knew it was my arrow. So I could just stay true to my era, and nothing else came along to shake that era off.
Right.
You never know when the era is going to come to an end.
Right, right.
Because really, I started out saying, man, you know, the NPC National IBB World Championship, to win the Mr. Olympic would be an awesome thing. And I won it the first time. Then I said, you know, I would really love to win it three times. Next thing you know, I won it three times. I didn't think about eight Mr. Olympians.
Right.
I didn't think about five. I didn't think about three until I reached one.
Right.
But after I got the third one, I said, well, Frank Zane won it three times. And I think Sergio Olivier won it three times.
Right.
I think I can do three. Then I did three. Then I said, well, maybe I can do five. Because that'll be a record in itself. It's going to be next off, but I can do five. Next thing you know, I do five. Whoa, man, this is getting serious now, you know? But it's feeling great. Then next thing you know, I said, well, man, if I can get seven, no one has done seven in a row, but I'll still be tied with Arnold for seven overall. So that'll be a record in itself. Then I reached seven. And after reaching seven, wow. And at that point, I said to my wife, Shirley, I said, well, you know, this is a record, seven in a row. Nobody's ever done that. I've tied Arnold's record. And I said to her, what do you think at this point? And Shirley looks at me and says, what do you think at this point? What do you mean, what do you think? You got to do eight. What's the matter with you? And I was embarrassed by even thinking less than eight.
Yeah.
But you've certainly been an athlete and my best buddy. She's been my girlfriend since the second grade.
Right.
So she's been one of my biggest cheerleaders. And so I was embarrassed just by thinking that was enough.
Yeah.
She's, oh no, that's, I think it was the money that she was after. No, you gotta do eight. So that being said, we buckled down because I'll tell you something I experienced at the seventh Olympia. After the seventh Olympia, it's like my body was tired. It's like my knees were sore. My hips were tight. My shoulders were sore. Like, okay, what's happening to my body here?
Yeah.
I was racked with soreness and not a pain such that it was something just was in one spot. It's like something was going on in every spot.
Right, right.
And I said to myself, man, can I go beyond this? You know, I gave myself a time off. When I say time off, I use what I call now my training, ultimate bodybuilding training package is a 3-day power circuit whereby I'm training each body part once every 7th day.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Monday was arms and chest, calves, abs. Wednesday was legs only. Friday was back, shoulders, calves, abs.
Right.
In between days, maybe a little speed walking, that sort of thing, stretching, that kind of deal.
Right.
Did that for about a month and a half. Then my body started to recover. I started feeling good, some good food. I detoxed my body, which is very important, you know, and gave it some rest. And the next thing you know, I was feeling good again. I'd revived. But then I went to my 3-on-off-1. See, I had, prior to my last competition prep, I would use a straight 6 about 6 weeks out from the show.
Mm-hmm.
7 to 6 weeks out, I would use a straight 6. And as you know, a straight 6 days a week training and having a 1 day off, which is Sunday, that's a butt kicker.
Yeah.
And it's easy to overtrain on that particular type program. And so going into the last Olympia, or going into the one after I, you know, recovered, the last one, the 8th one, I stayed with the 3-on-off-1 the whole time.
Oh, okay.
But my body recovered. I felt good.
Hmm.
I maintained my pump. Because one thing I did know that my legs tend to overtrain on the other program. They just look watery all the way to maybe 3 days before the show. Then they would finally start to get life to them.
Right.
But falling to 3-on-off-1, they never lost life.
Hmm.
And I felt good. I felt more recovered.
So you needed that recovery.
I peaked perfect.
Yeah.
I had a bit of overtraining happening.
Hmm.
That happened through the first 7 Olympians.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
8. I started to learn how to pee. I learned something different. Then it was okay. See y'all later. I'm out of here.
Right.
Wow.
Going back to that 88 Olympia, Lee, you also had a great routine that year. I think it was to music from Rocky, right?
Oh, man. That was excellent. I mean,
that was a great routine.
The Survivor was out, and I mean, a lot of people just ran to the theaters to see that. And
yeah.
Any athlete, it gave you a good pump and a rush.
Right.
After hearing that. And then, you know, the fact that it was heard so much amongst the athletic community, particularly in the bodybuilding community, that it was like a staple or a mantra, so to speak.
Yeah.
And using that music really resonated with the audience, resonated with the judges. So it was the perfect music. Powerful for a powerful physique. Big music for a big physique.
Yeah.
When I took it to the stage, it worked very well. Everybody was pleased with that. I never had a boo. I've never had a boo during any of my Mr. Olympia reigns. At least I never heard one. If it was,
right.
I never heard it.
Well, that's saying a lot with 8 Olympias.
Yes, saying a lot. Saying a lot. You know, it's amazing how my journey began. You know, as a 6-year-old kid, I wanted to be Samson and Hercules.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the age of 17, I recall getting on my knees one night before going to bed, and I prayed. And I said, Lord, if you see fit to make me the best at the sport that I love so much, I'll go before the world and give you the praise and the glory for it. And apparently he saw something, and he heard something in the prayer of that 17-year-old. He stayed true to his word. And I've tried to use my success in bodybuilding with my fans, with the general public, to uphold the end of the bargain in which I promised the Lord that I would.
Wow.
And here I am today, 8-time Mr. Olympia. Just last night, I received the legendary award by the Atlanta Business League.
Oh, really? Congratulations. For,
you know, in the community and so forth with kids and promoting health and fitness throughout communities and so forth. And so it feels good to know that your life has had an impact.
Yeah.
Because after all, the measure of a man can only be determined by the lives he impacts during his journey here on earth.
Right.
That's the measurements that we can have. Those who say, I remember.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Well, I agree with that, Lee. I think you're probably the best champion ever. Not just with wins or Mr. Olympia titles or whatever, but just the way you conduct yourself. And, you know, with this Bodybuilding Legends series, I've done interviews with Samir Banoot, Mike Katz, Bill Grant, Rich Gaspari, and they've all singled you out as someone who is a great person, not just a good bodybuilder, but a great person, you know. And I think the way you conduct yourself, and even when you were competing, I think people looked up to you as the leader and looked up to you as the king just because of the way you conducted yourself, you know, as a bodybuilder.
Well, you know, like I said, you know, it's you only get one shot around. So I like to breathe. I like to exhale. I like to enjoy and stay in the moment,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they come real fast.
Yeah.
I remember meeting Joe when I was 23 years old and he was 60 at the time.
Wow.
I mean, it's amazing. And I just thought about that after his passing, that he was 60 when I met him.
Yeah.
But he had so much energy, and he gave so much life, you know. And one thing about Joe, when you were with him, you thought you were the only one in the world. So when I heard Sean Ray talk about his experience with Joe, I heard, then Jay Cutler, what right did Jay Cutler say he had an experience with Joe? And then all of a sudden I heard Ronnie Coleman, and then Rick Gaspari talks about him and Joe. I'm like, wait a minute, that's my Joe Williams. You guys lay claim to Joe.
Right.
I mean, but he was there for everybody and was loved by everybody and have imprint on all of the guys' lives, you know. We can say the same for Mr. Jim Mannion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jim helped coach a lot of us, not only through, you know, the bodybuilding world, but also through business world and being good people and being, you know, good diplomats and also having a good moral character, you know, to impart in the lives of other people. So all of that is good stuff.
Yeah.
It makes a difference, give you life beyond, you know, the stage.
Yeah. Going back to a couple of the other Olympias you did, Lee, when they did that drug testing in 1990, how did you feel about that? I mean, that was something new that they did that year, and I know a lot of the guys didn't like it. How did you feel about that contest?
Well, I think, number one, your hard work and the foundation of principles and how you develop your physique would determine what happens on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
None of us was made of drugs, period.
Yeah.
So whether they were a part of it, whether they were not a part of it, it really didn't matter.
Yeah.
Because all of us spent a lot of time in the gym, a lot of time. Each and every one of the guys that competed during that era were professors.
Mm-hmm.
We knew our nutrition. We knew our training. So it didn't make a difference. I think one of the things that were negative about it for guys who did use substances, it pushed them more in the direction of using things that was more of a tablet form that could put stress on the liver or the kidney,
right,
which is very dangerous.
Right.
Because it was in and out of the system real fast. So I'm glad that they stopped doing that, you know, because there's no real test.
Yeah.
No real test. But you look at the fact too, if there was some type of drug or pill that could make you a Mr. Olympia, we would have millions of Mr. Olympia.
Right, right.
A million Lee Haney, a million Risk Aspires, a million Lee DeBrothers, a million Arnold Schwarzeneggers,
mm-hmm,
and Shurigels and so forth. But there's only one.
Right, right.
So whether it's done or whether it's not done, it doesn't make a difference.
So it was a good idea, but the testing wasn't extensive enough or in order for it to be really successful, right?
Well, I don't think it's successful anyway, period.
Yeah.
Also, if you use the right type of herbals and so forth, then your system is clean. It cleans, mm-hmm, the liver,
yeah,
it cleans the kidney.
Right.
So as of today, yet they still have not, even when you look at the Olympic Committee, they just tell you about the people who got caught.
Yeah. Yeah.
Say who used it because they can't determine that.
Yeah.
So that was a waste of time. I think it was a good thing as far as trying to get the sport within the realm of being an Olympic sport, which,
yeah,
that's what Ian and Joe tried so hard to do.
Right.
And that still haven't happened today. Bodybuilding has its own culture. You know, is that his own culture? You know, when you go to a bodybuilding show, you know there's something totally different about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the audience is different. It's, yeah, not the same as going to a boxing match or a tennis tournament. It's just not. We have, yeah, our own following and our own federation, and it's good and it's healthy. I love where I come from as it relates to bodybuilding. You know, I've never seen a fight break out of the bodybuilding competition. I never seen people hate each other, do that sort of thing. What I have seen is a lot of camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of love, a lot of compassion, people enjoying what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I see a lot of big bellies and muscle, but hey, we're a mixture of all these different things. You see all these different, we have 190 countries in the IFBB. That's saying a lot.
Yeah.
We have something to really be proud of.
Right.
And if the world look at us, I think the world will learn to get along a lot better.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
we are many nations, many people, and we enjoy what we love to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that last Olympia that you did then, Lee. When you went into that 91 Olympia, you knew that was going to be your last one then, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the last one, man. Last set, best set. You know, that was one of the terms that me and my buddies use a lot in the gym.
When, yeah,
we finished. But it's me and Superman Blunt. Then I had a guy named Rope Man.
He's, yeah,
the NPC chairman of Georgia. And another guy named Fred Richards. Fred was a retired recon Marine. So I had some great training partners. And then Tony Matanga, the big Italian kid I found out in California. So had some great training partners. So we've always come back with last set, best set. So that was my last set, and I wanted to be the best one. And it was as though when I won the last Olympia, I was able to finally exhale. Not that I held my breath, because I've always kept, you know, my profession in a particular category. My profession was my job. So after I finished training, I would get home. Then I became a husband and a father.
Yeah.
That was my priority then. I never took my work home with me. Although I did in the way that I would eat, because I still had to stay on target when it came to that.
Right.
After winning that last Olympia, I was able to say, it's finished. You know, it's finished. I can now hang out and have a happy meal at McDonald's, you know, with my son, and have a milkshake and that sort of thing. And not to say I didn't, because I remember the last Olympia, I think it was Josh's birthday. We had one of these big old cookies, and guess what? I had a nice chunk of that thing, and I ate it. I said, you know, I said, Lord, if it's meant for me to win the Olympia, I will. And this cookie that I'm going to enjoy with my son is not going to stop me from doing that. I prayed over that cookie. Apparently, he blessed it, and I won that Olympia.
Yeah,
but it was awesome, man. It was then time I felt, okay, it's time to sow the seeds in other areas now. Okay, I've proven I've been Mr. Olympia 8 times in a row successful. Now, how can I take the same success in other areas of my life?
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to then venture more so, or venture out more in the business arena. And that's what I focus on after that.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, that last one, I always have the picture embedded in my mind of my wife and my son, Joshua. Josh was about close to four at that time. No, he was, yeah, close to four. And Olympia was all about 8-9 months.
Mm-hmm.
All of us were on stage together, and they were able to enjoy that moment with me. My last one, both kids on the stage.
Wow.
And I think that resonated with a lot of the bodybuilding fans, too.
Yeah.
Around the world, that you can be Mr. Olympia, you can be a husband, you can be a father twice, and you can still be a champ in every aspect of your life. So that was very, very special for us.
Yeah, I remember Shirley used to always come on stage with you after you won, and you guys would kneel down and pray after every Olympia. I used to watch those on ESPN all the time.
Yes, yes. She was really coming to get the check. But it's been an awesome journey. Still have fun. Just having it's been a great life, you know. So bodybuilding has been good to me.
Yeah.
Now with the International Association of Fitness Science, which is my certification organization, then, of course, the Lee Haney Nutrition, I still use the tools of my trade to inspire and impact the lives of other people.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about what's happening there. And now, I'm promoting my first shows.
Yeah.
We have coming up October the 31st in Atlanta, what is called Lee Haney's Physique and Fitness Games. So it's a competition that will include, of course, bodybuilding, figure, physique, bikini, and the fitness games, which will be an obstacle race for kids, teenagers, as well as adults. Also kids, then we have the strongman organization working with us, pro and amateur. Then we have an organization called Battle Frog, which is the Navy SEALs group that'll be handling the obstacle style races. So we have all of them involved. We have USA Gymnastics that's involved with us too. So it's awesome being able to use what I've achieved as Mr. Olympia to bring the fitness world together to promote health and fitness in a whole new way.
Yeah.
So I think it's great that a lot of us who are now retired from the stage is doing that. You know, running has his event. Field has his event. You know, Linda Murray has her event.
Yeah.
All of us are doing it. And all has done an incredible job there in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that is a huge landmark to draw from, but we've been able to achieve there. So we're very happy with that. And, you know, I'm happy that the business world, some of my buddies who part of the Hemmelgarten racing team won Indy 500.
Oh, yeah.
But Hemmelgarten is part of that. Another guy, Ken Melby. These guys are some originators of European health spa. They own Paramount Acceptance. Then you have Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey is one of my is my title sponsor.
Oh, really?
That we have coming up. Then we have Harbinger, the glove company. They're on board with us. Then we got Power Block. They're on board with us. Then we got Sherman College, the chiropractic college. So they're on board with us. So we have a lot of incredible people that's a part of what we're doing. We also have benefit resource planning. So we got all of these different people networking from different business communities that are now joining forces with Lee Haney to make health and fitness a staple in communities in different parts of the country. Chick-fil-A Foundation. Wow. So absolutely incredible. We've got some great people involved with this.
And this is the first year for it, Lee?
This is the first year.
Okay.
This is the first year. For people wanting to know more about it, they can visit my website at leehaney.com.
Okay.
And we have, they can sign up there, they can register there, and we're looking forward to putting on the first class event. Of course, if I do it, it's got to be first class.
Yeah. I think I'm going to come out and see that show. That sounds great.
Yeah, we would love to have you here, John.
Okay. All right, Lee, I want to thank you for taking all this time to talk with us. I appreciate your time. And again, it was a fantastic career, a real blessed career, I believe, and probably the best bodybuilder ever. Eight-time
Don't say
Olympia.
Probably, John. I see. All keep right. saying that. You got somebody else in mind, John. I know you do.
Well, Arnold was my first idol, you know.
Well, thanks, John. I really appreciate it. Thanks for what you do. Thanks for what you do. You get the word out there. You're keeping some of us legends viable in today's time.
It's great to hear the stories from you guys, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. God bless you, John.
Okay. Thanks, Lee. Thanks for joining me on the Bodybuilding Legend Show, and I really appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, buddy. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank again Balanced Body Lab for sponsoring this episode, along with Florida Alternative Medicine and SixPackBags.com. All right. Join us next week for another interview for our Mr. Olympia series, where we'll be talking to 1982 Mr. Olympia, Chris Dickerson. See you guys then. Have a good week. Take care, everybody.